There have been three adjustments made to the future non-conference schedule for Ohio State. And Berm, I just realized.
What day is it?
It's Thursday.
Oh, you know what that means? It means that there were the perfect number of adjustments as thoughts on a Three Thoughts Thursday on the beat. That's on the Austin and Berm Show.
It's amazing. I can't believe how that worked out.
It's funny. It always works out.
I am Austin Ward. That is Jeremy Birmingham. This is The Beat with Austin and Berm hanging out down here. 10TV, 97.1, 10TV Plus, and on YouTube and all audio platforms. Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk about the conference scheduling, non-conference scheduling. I think it is not my favorite, but it's the start of camp season. So thing number one, Berm, is what is going to be going on at the Woody? What is the goal for Ryan Day, Mark Pantoni? They've got 5 1-day camps. What are you most excited for?
I'm most excited to just get out there and see the coaches work. It's funny, there are so many instances now through the football calendar where we get a chance to interact with the Ohio State football coaches, to see them in their profession, to see them in all of their marketing opportunities. There are very few opportunities where we actually get to see them coach.
Mm-hmm. Just purely coach.
Purely coaching. And I think that there's actually something really, and I'm going to get romantic as I always do when I talk about this sport. There's something beautiful about watching these exceedingly high-level performers at Ohio State, right? The coaches who are at the top of their profession, teaching a high school freshman who has zero chance of ever playing football at Ohio State how to properly do something. Like, it is a reminder that these guys got into this for a very different reason than they're likely in it now. These are obviously people who want to be great and have a purpose in life. But Ryan Day talked about it a lot this offseason, and we hear it all the time from other coaches. Their primary mission is still to teach young people how to handle bad things. And it's a coincidence, of course, that they put them through a lot of bad things when they're at these
camps.
Well,
it's almost like they design it that way.
Yeah, but like, it is a reminder of how hard it is to be an Ohio State football player also. When you see, and we'll see on Thursday morning out at the Woody, 600 to 700 kids. And of that 600 to 700, there's 20 to 25 that have a real chance of ever playing for Ohio State.
Or
college football anywhere. And it is a reminder of what the challenge is and how hard it is. And yeah, there's obviously specific things like finding a quarterback in the next couple weeks, if you can, in the class of 2026. But it's also a reminder of how fickle the industry is. Ohio State is hosting a quarterback next week from Louisiana who they had not recruited until they saw a highlight clip of a receiver that this guy was throwing the ball to, right? So like, it's a reminder like, hey, if you're out there and you're a high school football player and your dream is to play at a place like Ohio State, like, you have an opportunity. Now you just have to go be one of the best football players in the world to do it. But it's pretty cool to see it all up close and to watch these coaches give back in a way that we don't get to see through the season.
Are you saying that the Buckeyes might pull a reverse Olave this summer?
It could be. Yeah, I mean, the receiver, his name is Jabari Mack. He's a wide receiver who's committed to LSU, who Brian Hartline hosted for camp last summer. But he's his quarterback there. Some pretty impressive tape. And so they're like, hey, wait a second. Why don't you just come visit and see what happens? Because they need a 2026 quarterback, and the Buckeyes are looking all over for one. And it's interesting to see how they go through this process. So,
if you're talking about the beauty of summer camp season, because I mentioned...
And of course, everyone on the beat and how well everyone's dressed is always one of my other favorite things, to see the stylings of everybody that we are working alongside.
That's some real inside baseball talk there. But and some of this may be too. I mentioned that, it's been 2 months since the end of spring camp and the spring game. It's like, these guys can change their bodies pretty dramatically. Mm-hmm. That is one of my favorite parts because I'm going there to go to the Woody to check in on the current team and to try and get some insight on how that's going with, whether that's Mickey Marotti himself or the rest of the coaching staff when they have some down moments, which they don't have a ton of them throughout camp season. But that's the primary motivation for me to be around there. But the second part of that is, well, which one of them, those Buckeyes who love the game, who want to be around the Woody constantly, not just the coaching staff working with a freshman who might never play at Ohio State, but I remember last year it was G. Scott going out there with Keenan Bailey to lead position drills. There were times during, practice periods where G. Scott was taking the script himself and leading it fully, and Keenan Bailey was just standing back watching like, this is pretty cool. And that was one of those moments, and I think maybe we talked about it then. It's like, maybe G. Scott's going to be a captain on this team. He's certainly carrying himself like one. And even if he's not, he's setting the stone, the tone for the tight end room as a veteran leader and as a senior. And that was really encouraging to see from him. You know, as we talked to him after his career wound down, that was one of a million stories that kind of slipped through the wayside, but it was a reminder of the things that were coming for him down the road. And we've seen that, like, even superstars, Tyquan Lewis, to go back 6-7 years, or Chase Young popping around to some of these camps even two years ago, he was coming back and helping. And so that's cool for me to see as well, because it gives you an insight into, we say all the time that these guys are, that Ohio State is recruiting very high-level people, but they're giving back. This is not something that they have to do. It used to be.
It used to mean virtually nothing.
Well, it used to be a shortcut where you could be paid for your time as a camp counselor. And that's going way back into the earlier days of my career. And it's like, well, that's why you might see 40 or 50 of these guys. Now, in the NIL era, they don't need that as a summer job. They don't need that as a shortcut to get paid. They are truly doing it because they love the game and they want to teach it. So that is.
And they all live at the Woody.
And I'm getting it, you know, into that little poetry there as you. But I think that is a very cool part. And then you see, and this doesn't happen all the time, but I think about a Terry McLaurin performance, Darren Lee coming multiple times to try and earn that offer, Jermaine Matthews.
Yeah, it's the most recent one. Denzel Ward. I mean, it's
which one is your favorite one of those camp stories?
I mean, we've talked about it before in other places we've worked, but it's certainly the Terry McLaurin story. The fact is, Terry showed up and surprised people. You know what I said earlier, like, you may not be on Ohio State's radar right now, but if you can walk into that building and do one thing that really catches someone's eyeballs, like, you can go, wait a second. And in 2013, Terry McLaurin coming to camp in Ohio State saying, you're kind of short, you're not really that well put together, but you run really fast. Also, you can't catch the ball. But if you can go work on this, come back and prove to us that you've been working at it. And I remember specifically watching him walk across the field with Terry Combs and like, uh-oh, they're pulling him into the office. And then he gets the offer and commits shortly thereafter. We don't even have to go back that far. Bod Penn Miller, a year ago, nobody knew who Bod Penn Miller was. And, you know, even though he's a Central Ohio high school athlete, 6'4", 200 pounds, all the things that should draw the attention of scouts, it really hadn't translated at that point. He had some MAC offers and showed up at camp last summer, and Brian Hartline couldn't take his eyes off him. And I remember walking off the field talking to Brian Hartline, and he said, I think I'm going to offer that Bod Penn Miller kid. I'm like, who? 3 days later, Bod Penn was back for the 7-on-7 camp that Ohio State was like, we have a house team. Your team isn't participating, but we'd love to have you out here just so we can see what you do. And voila, offer, commit, and just like that. And now Bod Penn Miller is, you know, one of those players at Ohio State that is going to go down as like, hey, that guy had no business thinking he was going to get an offer when he showed up, and he did. And there's certainly been others, but it's rarer. It's more and more rare now because the pervasiveness of recruiting on the internet, but it's still a sweet reminder. I mean, we've talked about Jake Cook last summer and the vomit.
I was just going to say, there were multiple examples of that just last summer.
I actually wonder if in the new era of college football with NIL, with the expanded scholarships, if you're going to see more of those stories, because
I hope so.
Ohio State has been very adamant that, like, hey, we can't have 85 five-stars on the roster. So you're going to have to find developmental guys. So if you're in Ohio and you're 6'4", 200 pounds, and you can run a 4.4, and maybe you're not a polished receiver yet, or maybe you're 6'5", 285-pound offensive lineman at Westerville North, and you have been overlooked because the last time you were at Ohio State was 2 years ago, and you were a flabby 14-year-old that nobody thought was going to develop into anything, and all of a sudden you're a man, and then you show up, and you're like, oh, wait a second. Like, I hope there's more of those stories.
Show up, work out, compete your butt off. Mm-hmm. And if you puke, you might get some extra eyeballs on you too. I think, like, we make fun of it a little bit. It's tongue in cheek. Like, he was really, really going after it in the one-on-ones. And it was a hot day, and it's not unusual to see
that. They give you a lot of Gatorade.
Yeah, to see that sort of thing happen. But it was, he goes right back in. And I wonder, because he had a surprising spring, mm-hmm. we're hearing way more about him potentially. Like, he's not going to be in that top rotation, but the fact that he's not as far removed from it as a true freshman might be.
Yeah, he's pushing the two deep as a guy that nobody thought was ever going to play at Ohio State.
Is really encouraging for him. That goes back to his camp. So I wonder if this is going to become a Sam Hubbard dodgeball story down the road, where and it's not as fun because it is about vomit.
I mean, it might be more fun because we can, as the story grows, the amount of vomit will grow with it. We'll be like, do you remember that time when Jake Cook puked at a camp and it was 8 gallons of vomit?
I thought it was 9.
They had to move the competition to another field when he was done because there was so much puke.
Justin Fry's shoes were just soaked
to the socks.
Soaked to his socks. Just unbelievable. All right. So that's camp season. We're going to have
I'm excited. Let's get to it.
A ton of coverage coming from that. Really looking forward to it. I think it's one of the best times of year. So we're going to be able to talk. Berm will have plenty of talking stuff to do about that as guys try and earn offers, guys try and commit, you know, official visits throughout this month. So we'll have that. And then I'll try and pick up some nuggets along the way to drop along.
Maybe
for the
we'll do a Snappy J's from there. We haven't snapped our J's in a while.
It's been a while. I almost wanted to snap some J's about what happened with the non-conference schedule for 2029.
Oh, no. I didn't see it. So, America, if you're watching, which you are, and we appreciate it, this whatever he says here is brand new to me. So, let's hear it.
Three changes were made.
In 2029.
The 2029 non-conference schedule begins.
Uh-huh.
Navy.
Okay.
Week 2.
Navy on like Labor Day weekend?
September 1st, I believe, is the date.
Yeah, so it's like, it's going to be...
Maybe I'm wrong. I didn't know you were going to quiz me on the date.
There's going to be a ton of American paraphernalia at that game.
Season opener. I think that's the date. I believe it was in September.
You're better off opening with Navy than you are playing in week 2. Let's be very clear.
We'll have that debate in 4 years' time. But week 2...
2029's most important game, starting now.
Charlotte.
Uh-huh. 49ers.
And completing the 3-game non-conference slate is Youngstown State.
Oof.
So here...
Okay, so what changed?
Nevada was originally scheduled for 2029. That's the third change. They signed Youngstown State to a deal. They signed Navy to it. So those two teams are new to the schedule. And Nevada was moved back to 2030, which maybe all of this will change by then. And I hope for 2029's sake it does, because... You might say, Austin, you are making too big of a deal out of something that, like, they might scrap entirely. If you get your wish and there is a 12-game Big Ten only schedule for Ohio State, great. Mm-hmm. I've been begging for that. And you'll see, why did you complain about something that you thought could change before it arrived? Well, I feel like this, because it is a weak non-conference schedule. It is very weak. And I can understand why it's weak, because the
maybe we don't know exactly how strong those Charlotte program is going to be 4 years from now.
Ohio State is already favored by 35 points in that game.
Oof.
So that's not real, but that's what that spread is going to be. There's no incentive for Ross Bjork and Ryan Day to schedule aggressively outside the league.
Nope.
They have done that. They were leading the forefront when they were signing some of these series with Oregon, Washington, Texas this year, Alabama coming, Georgia. Those games are still on the schedule for now.
Yeah.
I certainly feel like they won't be. I'm on the record as saying that they're going to get canceled. And in the expanded college football playoff era, unfortunately, they probably should be, as long as the selection committee is proving that it does not value the strength of your schedule. So Big Ten is playing 9 conference games. As of this moment, the SEC has not budged off of 8. That is what they are arguing over in terms of the future format with the 5+11 or the 4-4-2-2-1. Which are both ridiculous, but they're continuing to argue over the strength of schedule demands. And I feel like this is the first time that I've seen it and that I can remember it from Ohio State, where they used to say, we got to have a marquee game, probably going to have a MAC game, and the other one could be whatever.
Yeah.
This is not that. And I think it is in direct response to what has been happening with the selection committee.
Well, it ties into something that Ryan Day talked about. I saw it on Wednesday. He was having a conversation with Adam Rittenberg from ESPN and said, hey, the Big Ten has 18 teams. It is, without question, one of the top 2 leagues in college sports. There has to be 4 automatic berths from the Big Ten. Otherwise, you just have to scrap a lot of this stuff. And so I think some of it can be remedied quickly if – the powers that be say, hey, you know what? They're right. It's a 16-team playoff down the road. We know that's where it's going. Like, let's not pretend otherwise. It's a 16-team playoff. There's 4 from the Big Ten. There's 4 from the SEC. Because that encourages those leagues to say, hey, we can still take some swings on heavy hitters out of conference. Because it doesn't matter.
Yeah. If
that Ohio State-Alabama game doesn't have to be canceled, because the loser of that game is not going to be putting themselves in harm's way if you lose it. So if you can just establish some ground rules, and this is obviously college football's biggest issue in respect to NIL and recruiting, transfer portal, playoff, everything. There's nobody has an idea of where it's going. Establish some parameters, and then you can move around the other pieces. Ohio State should never play an FCS school, period. Okay, and I know they are this coming September, and I hate it. Yeah. I don't.
It's a waste of everyone's time.
It's bad for everyone. Youngstown State does not benefit from playing Ohio State other than giving some money. You know what? Here's the deal. Ohio State makes enough money. If you want to give Youngstown State $800,000 a year just to strengthen Ohio football, write it off.
Sure.
Okay? Make a contribution to the school. Fine. There's no reason in the world that they should be playing these guys on the football field.
No.
Period.
No, there
period.
Shouldn't be.
So set some ground rules, set some parameters, and then let the SEC and Big Ten stop doing this. We're too afraid to play someone good in the non-conference.
Yeah, I mean, that's my frustration as well. But like, even why should they protect?
Yeah, it's not afraid. It's pointless.
The Alabama and Georgia games, if it doesn't matter if you win or lose them, then why are we playing them in the non? Why do any of these games exist in the non-conference? Because they're irrelevant. You're going to see them match up if they're good enough in the playoff. If it goes to 16, then you're going to have four games that you have to win. You're going to face four opponents. They're more than likely than not going to be from the SEC and the Big Ten, depending on how it shakes out. But you're probably going to see multiple of them. So, again, that is why I've been saying for several years now that in an 18-team conference, you should be playing as many of those teams as possible. There shouldn't be games that you can say, well, it doesn't matter if you lose. Or you shouldn't be playing games that you absolutely can't lose.
Yeah.
So Alabama, Georgia, like those games are fun, but they're going to exist. We're going to see that a lot more consistently.
Just because of the playoff.
And we're going to see it in, potentially on-campus sites, but neutral sites at worst. They're going to exist. So play 12 conference games because you still don't see the whole league. It's still an unbalanced schedule.
I've seen a lot of online discourse this week with our good friend Spencer Holbrook, for example, on X, Twitter on Tuesday. He was going back and forth with Brooks Austin from Sports Illustrated, who covers Georgia, who was lamenting that Big Ten fans are suggesting the SEC needs to go to 9 conference games. Because
they do.
They absolutely do, but that's not enough either. The point is, if you have 18-team conferences that are full of really good teams, why would you not just play your conference? And then you go to the playoff. Like, there is no other explanation. Find some parameters, make it the same across the conferences, and go from there. I understand that maybe that puts the Pac-12 and Notre Dame's and in different conversations, but we all know where this is going. It's been going towards the super conferences for decades.
What's the Pac-12? Like, who? What is it?
Yeah.
Who cares?
I mean, well, Oregon State cares.
Yeah, I guess.
Who else is out there? It's them and...
And then Oregon State, Washington State, cast-offs that left the Mountain West. Like, all of that is going on. It's not... Yeah. It shouldn't be a factor in this conversation anyway. Like, the best teams from that league are now in the Big Ten, which is crazy. Just like the best teams from the Big 12 are in the SEC.
So let's say right now, and we're just spitballing. We're just throwing things out there. We've got... How many, 36 teams, 36 teams in the SEC and Big Ten? Is that right? Is there 18
34,
in the SEC?
16.
Yeah. So eventually, are we not just going to two 24-team leagues and that's the high level of Division I college football?
Well, not until the broadcast deals expire.
I mean, we know where it's going, folks. Okay? We can see it. It's over the horizon. Let's just stop pretending.
Let's just get there.
What if we just took this year college football off and said, we're going to fix it.
No.
No? A little hiatus.
Because here's the thing. We also still love college football.
No, they hiatus because they ate us.
Yes, that's exactly what they say.
But I'm not one of those guys who cover the sport that hate it. Like, I love college football.
I love college football, so that's why I'm shocked to hear you say you want to take a year off from it.
At this point, I just want people to get it figured out.
Isn't the off season long enough?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so.
Did you say are or aren't?
Are. The thing number three is just going to be a spillover from that. If Ross Bjork's primary goal and motivation is to modernize the horseshoe in a way that people want to be there and that every single ticket is sold and then they can take that money and continue to have the most competitive team in college football, then you shouldn't be scheduling these ridiculous, whack non-conference games. And if you had 12 Big Ten games, maybe you wouldn't have to put 12 luxury suites in the south end zone and 400 luxurious wide chair back seats down there and move the band out. I'm not sure that I'm as, because I am a press box snob, I can't fully relate to the fan experience. Yeah. And I'm not out, like, the ones that are telling me they don't like it, that it's going to diminish the atmosphere, I respect that opinion, and I'm not going to argue against it because I can't. You might have a different vantage point on that.
Well, you know how I feel about the South stands.
I do know how you feel.
And the,
but is this going to make it better?
I don't know that it makes it worse. In an average Ohio State football game, the South stands are 60% empty by the time the second half starts, right? Because that's where the students are. Most games at the Shoe, because Ohio State's schedule has often been so poor, is a blowout by the third quarter. Everyone leaves anyway. So I don't really care from that perspective. I do care from the fact that if you want to sell a marquee product, and those seats are going to be quite expensive. I think it was
$6,000
for a season ticket or something. It's a lot. I don't mind putting all of the corporate snobbery in one area. Okay.
But it already is. It's up. It's in the.
Well, sure. Well, now you need. Okay. I don't mind putting it in two areas, I guess. I do not understand moving the band to where they'll be directly, basically next door to the opposing bands when they're in town. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they move that. Obviously, there's a lot of moving parts here. I, of course, I'm selfish. So I want to know how it affects me and the photo bunker, because I assume that will have to be.
Potentially
wiped away,
blown away.
I also think
for the 1922 club
that you should understand, and people in your of your ilk, you press box snobs, you're not going to be allowed on the field pregame anymore because there's not going to be room. And so
It's not going to change the
room. Jerry, if you're listening, we've talked about this. These snobs can't be down there anymore. There's no room. And now there's certainly no room. I think we should probably get used to that for the 2025 season.
Why are you doing this? Because and turning it back on me.
I want less people down there, not more. But for the atmosphere of the game.
Where do you want to shoot the pregame keys if I can't come down there?
I don't know. We can do it above the tunnel. We have a good time there. I think
that was the time that we got attacked by a redcoat.
Yeah, that guy was vicious. But I do think that, you know, we've been in stadiums in Dallas, for example.
And Purdue have something, these things that are similar.
No, certainly Indiana and Purdue are not on the same level as Ohio State, but Jerry World is, right? And they have suites all along the field.
Those are dumb. They're behind the bench.
Those people aren't watching the game, number one. And the people who are going to be in these suites at Ohio State aren't going to be watching the game either. They're just going to be standing there watching it on the TV in their suite. So I get the idea of selling and marketing and the experience. But, man, I just want Ohio Stadium to be louder. And I don't know that this is going to make it louder. I do think that it will be hard to convince people to pay for these seats when you're scheduling Youngstown State, Charlotte, and Navy.
Yeah, no, that's one issue out of many. And I don't want to be critical of the idea, because I think that, and I know that Ross Bjork has a very difficult job, and he has to walk a tightrope. He has to bring in revenue. Mm-hmm. He has to make sure that there are people who are willing to pay a lot of money to go to the Horseshoe. He also has to make sure that there are people who have affordable tickets to go to the Horseshoe, or else you're not going to have 100,000 seats.
Let me just swing off of that. Do you think that setting up these sort of premium seating options will allow the average fan's ticket to be reduced? Now, not cheaper than it is now, because inflation is what it is. It's still going to get more expensive. But do you think that it can help put a cap on the pricing of season tickets for the average fan?
I feel like Ohio State has already recognized that it cannot charge more for seats in the C deck. And that's why this is the idea, to find another revenue stream for people that are wanting to go to games and may have that money and the interest in a luxury box, and there aren't more that they can add to the top of the stadium. There's not more construction they can do.
B-deck that no one wants to sit in anyway, and put suites there.
Maybe they did some of that already. Yeah. You know, so there's limited resources. So when I say that the job is difficult, Ross Bjork has to modernize the Horseshoe. He has to deal with the broadcast partners. He has to schedule non-conference. He you know, has to find revenue streams to settle with the House settlement coming and to maintain Ohio State's place amongst the best contenders for the college football playoff championship every single year. That's not easy. Right. I recognize
that. But it is why he was hired specifically.
100%. He is the fundraising piece is what he's best known for. I don't think that this idea was arrived at haphazardly. It is certainly done with looking at other places. I think if you're talking about, as you said, is a vantage point, is it going to be really advantageous? Are people that are passionate fans going to be sitting in there and care that they can't see the game? Probably not. Are they going to be really loud right behind the end zone, or do they care about being in the tunnel? Maybe, maybe not. I don't have the research to back any of that part up. But as I said before with Ross Bjork and talking with Fox about moving the Texas game off of noon, off of Saturday, I think you have to give him credit for looking for ideas and advocating for Ohio State. We may not, he didn't win with Fox this time around. Yeah. Maybe it sets them up for something else down the road. I don't know if this experiment is going to work, if it's actually going to raise the money that Ross Bjork and Ohio State needs, if people are going to buy these tickets.
People are certainly going to buy them.
All of them?
At least corporate. Yeah, I mean, corporate entities will buy them every year and then divvy them up. So you'll see the same 16 people from Kroger or Limited or whatever every game. But here's what I...
But my point is, you may be frustrated about how one went. You may not like this one either. Mm-hmm. But Ross Bjork, if nothing else, has proven that he will not just accept the status quo. Mm-hmm. He is trying to find things for the future. And I think that should be, if you don't want to feel encouraged, that's fine. I think it should be encouraging that that's the kind of leadership that Ohio State has now, where for so long we heard, why won't Ohio State fight for itself? Why won't it throw its weight around? Why won't it push for things that it wants and not what the Big Ten or college football wants? It's doing that now.
No, and there I've seen on social media the reaction to this conversation. A lot of it was like, well, but there's other things that have to be done in the horseshoe to modernize it that are more important. And absolutely, you know, changing the turf, that's like a $3.50 charge for Ohio State. Now, they need to do it. They need to find a way to modernize it. It stinks. We've talked about it for years, okay? Everyone knows that. Updating the scoreboard. Like, that's a big project, okay? But it has to happen. So there, I think you should be encouraged that Ross Bjork clearly sees the need for those things as well and is trying. You have to generate money to do those things. So, we are in a very peculiar time of college. Like, everyone's broke, okay? But money's not real. So it doesn't matter. But it does still matter because Ohio State still has to pay contractors. They still have to pay people to do this. Now, we can make up all the funds we want when it comes to NIL and say it's coming from here or there. Who cares? But right now, when you're talking about what Ohio State has to do in the stadium to make it a better environment, the onus still, in my mind, falls on the people who are already sitting in the seats. And if that means moving students, I think the students should be right behind the visiting sideline. Pardon me. I mean,
I've talked to multiple people at Ohio State who agree with that.
So, like, there's other things they can do. Now, I don't know. I would think you move the students out of the south end zone and put them in the sidelines behind the visiting bench. Like, that's where they should go. Because then at that point, when the game's in hand or over, it doesn't matter if they're gone. But there's a lot of things that could change.
I mean, that is the way that you see most times when Ohio State is on the road. Where are the student section? Behind their bench. That's what makes it a home field advantage. Yeah. It's pretty annoying to have to listen to that.
And it's that way even at crappy places. I mean, I remember in 2018, Urban Meyer almost like got in a fight with a fan at Maryland because the guy was so in his ear. And I remember Brian Voltellini having to like grab Urban because like, and I'm not saying fans should taunt opposing coaches.
No, you're not.
But I am saying if you do taunt an opposing coach, it's better to do it where they can actually hear you.
That feels like a great way to end a Three Things Thursday on the beat. Maybe we'll have snap judgments from the Woody from camp. We'll see. If there's something to talk about, we will. I guarantee that we'll be back on Friday morning.